Accession number 9428, reel 6.
Mr. Keel, reel 6. Can we just turn to the subject of rations? Could you tell me what ration you were given whilst you were in the trenches?
Again, so long ago, but as far as I can think, it was all dried stuff. I mean, there was nothing really fresh, except sometimes we used to get a little bit of fresh, we say fresh meat, but it's very little. If we could make our stew, not always, but sometimes we would get a little bit of fresh meat and some dried vegetables, which you try and soak and continually boil in your little billy cans. And we used to make little stews, but very, very rarely. It was nearly always a bully beef and hard biscuits, or the other tin thing, I think it was called McConachy, as far as I was concerned.
Could you say what McConachy was?
McConachy was it was sort of meat and vegetables all in a can. Vegetables and meat. That was quite good, McConachy's, much better than the bully beef. It seemed to be always bully beef, and you can get so fed up with it that. And also, we used to have sometime in one place I can remember we had a surplus of bully beef. so silly. It was a very wet trench. Well, they were all wet, but this particularly wet floor to the trench. I don't think at this particular spot we hadn't got any duck boards, but we had a surplus of bully beef in their tins, unopened, and some clever made quite a nice pathway with cans, full cans of bully beef, and it was so nice and solid to walk on. A little story about that was that had been down there for some time, and I know one day I was flaming hungry, and I thought, well, I could eat anything now, so I thought I'll have a tin of bully beef. So I went to my little bit of trench and dug out of the ground one of these tins of bully beef, which wasn't perforated, a little bit scored on the top, but not busted. I opened this tin. Do you know, though it had been part of the floor, it was perfectly good to eat. So I ate it.
What else did you get in your rations apart from McConachy and bully beef and hard biscuits?
I can't remember anything else but those things. I guess those things just stuck in my memory. And
did you get any milk or?
Oh,
tea?
Gracious, no. I can't remember milk in our tea, but there must have been. It must have been either powder or milk like. Today we call it carnation milk, don't we? Concentrated milk. I should think it was that, but I just can't see it, if you understand. I can't see it at all.
In the area where you were fighting, was it possible to go to cultivated land and pick things like peas or beans and so on to help you in your diet?
Well, in the actual trench district, where the trenches were, but of course nothing was cultivated, so consequently nothing except weeds grew. But I can remember being somewhere either on the march or back out at rest. I can remember digging up carrots and turnips and eating those raw, and jolly good they were too. That's all I can remember about fresh thing. I don't ever remember seeing being near somewhere where apples were growing, so I can never say we ever was able to pick apples. I can't remember them.
Did you think the diet was adequate?
Well, it must have been, because I'm alive now. But it was very monotonous, we'll put it that way. But that's all I could say, monotonous. But there it was our life, that's what we were used to. I mean, I expect it's like a dog and cat. They're always fed one special sort of meat, and that is their life. That's all they've ever had. That's all they ever wanted. I expect it was the same with our food.
Right, thank you. If we might turn now to the special duties that you had during your time in the trenches. I believe that you were, first of all, an officer's batman. You've already mentioned it in this interview.
Yes, it was twice in my wartime things, and I was a batman. Yes.
Can you remember when you were in the trenches? When did you become a batman?
Well, I don't. My company commander, I can mention his name now because he's not with us. I don't. Well, he couldn't be with us anymore now because he was much older than I was then. Major Samuels. I don't know how it came about. He must have said, "Well, Keel, I want a batman. Will you just do little odd things for me?" I expect it came about like that, because he knew me right from the beginning, practically when I enlisted, until I left the battalion. So that's, I think, because he knew me, that's how I became his batman. But talking about a batman in the trench, it wasn't... Well, it wasn't much of a job for me, and it wasn't much of a job for him. And if I remember rightly, batman's, because you used to get extra pay for being a batman. You'll never guess how much it was, 10 bob a month. But anyway, Major Samuels, I was his batman. Oh, I couldn't do much for him because he was in just as dirty a state as I was and all the rest of the troops. But I used to try and clean his, oil his, not clean his, but I don't mean with polish, oil. I can't remember the name of the oil now, but it was a sort of oil that was helped to keep the water out for officers. The men never had it, I never had any of it. But officers, yes, they'd got cans or little bottles of this oil. And Dubbin, there's a name that's just come back to me, which I haven't mentioned. I haven't heard the word for donkey's years. Dubbin. It was a sort of lard, if you understand, but dark colour, dark grey. And Dubbin, I think the army, I've got a feeling that they used to issue Dubbin to us to rub on our boots. Yes, Dubbin. That's it. I don't know if it's called that now. I've never heard the word since those days.
How much time did you spend doing things for your commander?
There was nothing much I could do for him. Like I say, I could dub in his boots or oil his boots. I could... I couldn't wash his shirts. That must have been saved for when we got out, as we call it, out to rest. But I would probably go through his kit and rake out a clean shirt for him if he'd got it in there. As I say, I couldn't prepare baths or washing water or anything like that. There was nothing much I could do except see that he'd got a change of clothes and try to get him water, see that he'd got his food, because he'd had the same food as we would, but just to make sure that he had got his ration, the same as I had, hence the batman job. I would look after my governor as I would, say, look after my uncle or my father. That's all I can tell you about it, and all that for 10 bob a month. Which didn't mean anything.
Where was he housed, as it were? Was he in a...
Oh, they would have dugouts in the trenches, dugouts the same as us. But, I don't know, they were faked up a little better than ours. They would probably be one or two, or perhaps three officers in the one dugout, whereas we would cram in as many men as we could just to be undercover. But they'd certainly had a dugout, which was a little bit more palatial, should I say the word, than ours. That's all I can tell you about theirs.
When you were doing things like cleaning his boots, were you actually in his dugout?
Yes, in his dugout. That was... We tried to make their dugout as nice. I think some earlier on I told you about that dead Jerry that was killed and buried. Well, yes. That was outside the officers' dugout, and the officers wanted that dugout to be look like a nice one, like the other dugouts used to be, but we couldn't because of that big mound of earth. But otherwise, just slightly better than ours.
How did you try and improve their dugouts?
I can't tell you. Officers' kit was a bit better looking than ours. I really couldn't tell you. I can't see it, actually. Mm-hmm. And unless I can see it in my mind's eye, I can't talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Can you remember how long you served as a batman for...
No, I can't.
You can remember.
No, I think for most of my time in the trenches and out of the trenches, I sort of looked after the major as much as I could, because we had a mutual regard for each other. And I can remember him... I remember after the war was all over and I was demobbed, I remember thinking, I wonder how the major, or he was colonel by then, I wonder how he is. So I found his number in the direction. I rang him up and he said, "Oh, Keel, how lovely. Do come over and see me." He lived at Kensington. "Do come over and see me and have lunch with me." Which I did. And it was so nice meeting him. So nice. And he'd got lovely big boxes of chocolates for my family and all that. It was really joy of meeting. So I guess in the trenches and out at rest, I'd always had this regard for my major.
Hmm. Could you tell me why you think you got the job of officer's batman, apart from the fact that you knew the colonel when you were in Mill Hill?
I don't know whether I was, as now and as in show business or the rest of my life, whether I was a bit pushy and... if I knew there was a job going, I'd go for it. As I told you about the bugler and all these other things. I might have been that I was a bit pushy. Maybe I heard that Major Samuels wanted a batman. And if that was the case, I thought, "Oh, what about me? I'll have that job." That could have been a thing. But I've been thinking about... I wasn't a favoured one because I only lived the same life as all the rest, but... I've had a feeling lately that the powers that be, the higher-ups in my battalion, the colonel and whatnot, second-in-command and whatnot, that they looked on me with a slightly kinder light because I was one of the survivors of the early days at Mill Hill when we enlisted, because I told you their casualties were pretty awful. I was one of the survivors. I must have always been in the eye of all the powers that be in my regiment. And I got a feeling that any job that was going, I was looked on with a kinder eye than any Private Smith of C Company. I got that feeling. I don't know why. I got a feeling that I was looked on. Being one of the survivors of the early days.
Thank you.
But I was never favoured because I was Private Keel, if you understand.
Mm-hmm. From Batman, I think you went on to another particular job, which was mess caterer. Can you tell me how you
Yes,
came
I can.
That?
Yes, well, in... I've told you some time back that I spoke a fairly good French... and a lot of German, but the German wasn't needed, of course, except for shouting out obscenities across no man's land. That's the only thing German came over. But French, I did pride myself that I spoke a pretty good French that I'd learnt before the war as an apprentice jockey. Why am I saying that? Anyway, there was a job going sometime after we'd been in France that I don't know whether they found that French shops within a fairly moderate distance were open, and they did sell things that grocery shops do now, perhaps in short supply, but they did sell things. And also that the EFC, that is the Expeditionary Forces Canteens, came over and set up in France, so that all sorts of things like button cleaning stuff and whiskey and sweets and things like that could be bought at the EFC, and somebody had to go and buy them, and they were supplied with a horse and a two-wheeled cart and a driver. Oh, I just remembered my driver's name. Is that all that time ago? It doesn't matter.
What was his name?
I can't remember. It should come in a minute, I think. Anyway, I heard of this job going, but in no time it was snapped up by a bloke in my company. He couldn't speak French, to my knowledge. Very elementary, if he could. And he got this job, and boy, was I flaming mad. You know, going into shops, I can speak. But anyway, he'd got the job and I hadn't got it, and I always hated him for it first. Redhead, his name, that was the bloke who got the job. Then became Lance Corporal Redhead. He got that, and I was always mad about that. Well, he must have had that job for a good year, I should think. Until one day I heard, came through that Lance Corporal Redhead had got pipped in the shoulder. He got wounded. He got a shoulder wound and had been evacuated and was then on his way back to England. Oh, said me, I'm after that job. I don't suppose anybody else has got it. And I made a beeline straight to the powers that be. I don't know who it was. To the powers that be, anyway, and said, Redhead was gone. Is there any chance of having his job? I speak fluent French. I can do the catering and this and that. And to my great joy, I became the mess caterer and made up to Lance Corporal, which was another one and threepence a day. But I was then the mess caterer, and it was only through speaking French. We had an interpreter, a French interpreter, in our battalion, as most did, I think. Anyway, he was withdrawn by the French army, and so we hadn't got an interpreter until some clever one said, well, what about Lance Corporal Keel? He speaks French. Why can't he? We can't ask him to do this or to interpret this. Or when it came to billeting, when you come out of the trenches, accommodation had to be laid on for the regiment. The type of accommodation naturally for the troops would be the barns. You know, it's got a roof and straw and whatnot. There's usually washing facilities. But anyway, it was a home, a barn.
Were you instructed to differentiate between the corporals?
I was instructed to put all the troops in the barns, yes, and to scout around the village, try every house and see if they had accommodation for officers and or senior NCOs. And
what sort of accommodation would they be
that
put
would
into?
Be a bedroom in the French the French farms. And so I would find the house that had got rooms that I could put up an officer. The people would get paid for it.
Do you mean the French people would be paid for it?
The French people would get paid for it, yes. So naturally I always had a billet or two up my sleeve. But anyway, the job was just wished on to me, getting the accommodation.
So how it became. Do you mean it was wished on to you?
That was wished on to me.
How do you mean?
I don't know. I expect second in command or the colonel said, well, we haven't got an interpreter. We haven't got anybody to go round. Send Keel round. He speaks French. I think that's where I said, not favouritism, but why I must have always been in the mind's eye of the powers that be from being one of the oldest inhabitants of the regiment, if you understand.
What was your reaction to the promotion?
To what? To Lance Corporal? Mm-hmm. Oh, boy, oh, boy. One stripe. that one stripe was nothing. It's a stripe then, as now, one stripe is, apart from being a lance corporal, or you're spoken, you don't say, oh, good morning, lance corporal. You would say, good morning, corporal.
I asked you what you felt about the promotion.
Well, it didn't really mean anything, because it was what I call, or what we call nowadays, a protection
what
badge.
What do you mean by that?
Eh?
What do you mean by that?
Well, if you're Private Smith and you upset Private Jones, Private Smith can punch you on the nose, you see, but Private Smith can't hit Lance Corporal Keel on the nose, because he's striking a superior officer, and he'd be up on a crime for striking a superior officer. There is the protection stripe. That is what it's called. And I guess the why I got my stripe was protection, because I was handling money belonging to the regiment, all the money for the officers' goods in the canteen and whatnot, and the booze I was permitted to buy from the canteen.
Yes, perhaps you could go into the details of your duties. You've mentioned already that you were responsible for billeting private soldiers and officers.
Yes. Mm.
What other duties did you have, and how did you go about them?
Well, that's all it.
Where did you get the drink from, for example?
That was EFC, the Expeditionary Force Canteens. They supply, it's like NAFI. Think of NAFI today. Well, then think back. That was EFC, the Expeditionary Forces Canteen, was that day's NAFI. So they don't ask where I can get whiskey there, because they had everything. But not everybody could buy it. There was only accredited ones, like Lance Corporal Keel. He could, because of his stripe.
Were you able to take advantage of the situation to help yourself through?
Yes, I certainly did, yes.
Can you tell me?
Yes, I can. I can remember lots of ways. I don't think the regiment ever knew it, but officers, because of the water supply, was always bad. Officers used to like me to buy them large bottles of Perrier water. It is still in existence, Perrier water. And I can't tell you how much it was. Let's say it was 5 pence a bottle. Let's say they're 5 pence a bottle. Well, when the bottles were empty, I found that I could take them back to the Expeditionary Forces canteen, and I could get a halfpenny or a penny on all the empty bottles. And so I had quite an income from the empty bottles. Nobody ever queried. Nobody ever, if they did know, they didn't say. There was perks to me. No, I can't say. I did play the game. I don't think I ever bought stuff and flogged it. No, I didn't. I can't remember doing
that.
I can remember flogging something against my better wishes was on the Somme. That's when I was catering up there. One chap, I don't know whether he's a corporal, anyway, a bloke in the next little bivouac to me, at Albert, the town, little town, ruined town of Albert. He said to me one day, I said, Tommy, he said, is it possible to get a bottle of whiskey? I said, of course, of course not. Other ranks, apart from officers, are not allowed to have any alcoholic drink like that. A beer, if they can get a beer in the town, yes, but no, you can't. He said, you buy whiskey. I said, yeah, no. Couldn't you get me a bottle? I said, I could, but I wouldn't, because I'm not supposed to. He said, I'll never tell a soul. If you can only get me a bottle, he said, I'll stay in my bivouac, I said, until it's gone. Well, a nice bloke, so I said, well, don't ever breathe a word that I've supplied you with a bottle of whiskey. The sequence of that is that he did play the game. He did stay in his bivvy all that evening and all night long. And when I was about first thing in the morning, I had to pass his bivouac. It's still laughable to me. I passed his bivouac. The flap was still drawn. He was still inside. But he must have killed that bottle of whiskey, and he'd been violently sick, because just outside his doorway was a great big pile of spew with a set of false teeth balanced on the top. This little mound of sick. I can always remember that. That's the only time I did sell something. Or might have given it to him, I don't know.
Can you think of any other advantages for yourself in that situation?
No, I was satisfied with my discount on my empty bottles. And I don't know, maybe some of the officers gave me a tip, because I was even trusted. Officers couldn't get into town, but they'd say, "Keel, are you anywhere near a bank?" I said, "Yes, but when I go into St. Paul, there's banks there. Would you cash a cheque for me?" So I would take officers' cheques to the bank, show my authorisation and catering, and I could cash cheques for them. And do you know, to this day, I have amongst all my little bits of papers, things I've saved, I have a cheque signed by an officer in those days for 50 francs, I think. It was only about a fiver, about 50 francs or something. But I couldn't get into town, but I kept his cheque until I went into town next time. But in between times, he was killed. Well, the cheque wasn't worth anything when he was dead, but I still have the cheque. I couldn't cash it. Well, I could have done, but I wouldn't. And I still have it somewhere amongst my papers, this cheque. He didn't lose. His family didn't lose over it, because not being cashed, it didn't lose anything. Mm. But I still have it, if that's... Does it sound silly? I don't know.
Can you tell me how you would actually arrange a billet? What was the reaction of the French people to you when you knocked on the door?
I can't remember any reaction or any bad reaction. They knew that they had to put up the troops. They had done from the beginning of the... as long as there had been troops there, they would have to, I should imagine, from French law, would have told them, you must billet troops. You can't have troops sleeping out in the open when you have got a roof that you can put over them, like your barns. I expect they were told by the French authorities to make available the barns and any bedroom. I should think they were told. I don't know. I was never told that. But I should imagine they were told that they had to billet.
You never
can. I had to go and say that I have this number of men. How many does your barn hold? Well, then I shall put in there. That is all I can say that I did about the billeting. Tell them that we were coming. Ask them what the accommodation, how many, and tell them how many were going in. That's as far as I could tell them.
Remember how much money they would get for...
No, that didn't come into... didn't come into my reckoning in any way. I wasn't told that.
It wasn't your business to arrange that.
That had nothing to do with me, too. That was between the two countries.
Mm. Fine. You mentioned an officer who actually had to deal with claims for compensation.
Yes.
Can you tell me something about him?
Oh, yes. Yes, he was in my regiment, but he was... claims officer, that's a flash straight into my mind, claims officer, so that anything outside, the regiment had done any damage outside, it would go to the claims officer.
Can you remember his name?
Yeah, Lowenstein. Yes, he was a Jewish gentleman. Lowenstein, that's it, nice bloke. We got on very well together. And he gave me... I think he used to love to gad about and, go away for a day or two from the regiment. You know, he was going away on business. He probably went into town, had a good time. But we knew each other so well that he said, "Well, Keel, see if you can copy my signature. It's most unregimental. Can you?" So I found that I could. It was a sort of scrawl that, yes, I could copy it. So he said, "Well, we've got some men coming for pay today. And we've got the money. You know where the money is. You